Morning. Welcome to the study session Thursday, November 9th. We need to excuse the mayor. He is still out of town. He'll be back soon, and he can resume these activities. We have six items on our agenda. The first one is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on initiatives to improve city neighborhoods. So who's kicking this off? Carrie, is that you?
I am today.
Excellent.
Thank you, Vice Mayor and City Council. My name is Carrie Kent. I'm the Neighborhood Services Department Director. Here with me today is Mike Renshaw, our lead outreach coordinator. We have Police Chief George Gascon and John Pombier from the City Prosecutor's Office. We're here today to introduce multi-departmental approaches to address community needs to enhance the quality of life for our residents, businesses, and visitors through the coordinated delivery of city services. Our team of presenters today will be sharing with you programs we feel could be tools for building strong neighborhoods. I'll be presenting the Neighborhood Outreach Plan, the Chief will be presenting the Neighborhood Action Teams, and John will be presenting the Community Prosecution Program. Our goals with these approaches is to have city departments work better together to provide a coordinated response to neighborhood issues. These include identification of stakeholders, identification of neighborhood issues, prioritizing those issues and projects, developing multi-departmental action plans, and conducting ongoing evaluations to measure our success. As a result of staff reductions in our neighborhood office this fiscal year, staff conducted an assessment of existing services in order to reprioritize those services that are most critical to supporting our Mason neighborhoods. We'd like to share with you the results of those discussions and feedback we received from our internal and external partners, all of which are incorporated into our Neighborhood Action Plan and our Building Strong Neighborhoods initiative. The Neighborhood Outreach Office mission is to build partnerships with Mesa residents and neighborhood businesses by connecting them with appropriate resources to sustain Mesa neighborhoods. Our office exists to provide direct support to the mayor and council offices on neighborhood issues and to provide residents with the needed tools to effect positive change. Our outreach plan has five core activities. Those include city council support, neighborhood services support, neighborhood revitalization, collaboration and partnership, and development community support. Our office has three outreach coordinators, with Mike Renshaw serving as the supervisor for this team. Several months ago, we assigned our coordinators by council districts to work more closely with the council assistants on district issues. Since this time, our coordinators have collaborated with the council office to serve as a resource to address neighborhood issues requiring a multi-departmental response. And as you know, sometimes it takes a team of city staff from different departments to address these issues, and our coordinators assist in developing that coordinated response. Since August, our coordinators have had biweekly meetings with the council assistants to share with them neighborhood issues developing in your districts, which include neighborhood meetings, issues of concerns that have arisen from those meetings, upcoming meetings, as well as volunteer projects that are occurring in your districts coordinated through our department volunteer coordinator. This information is assembled in a weekly report that is provided to the council assistants so that they could share with you all. Our goal is to keep you informed of the department activities that we're involved with on a daily basis. These meetings also serve to allow your council assistants to bring forward issues that aren't in the report that you might want us involved with or need to keep us informed of. In our neighborhood support goal, our outreach coordinators will spend a good portion of their time assisting residents to access city services by providing information and potential resources to our Mesa neighborhoods. They'll be spending a considerable amount of time in the field responding directly to neighborhood issues and requests for assistance. One of the services our coordinators offer is to facilitate meetings in our Mesa neighborhoods to assist them with identifying issues, developing specific teams to address those issues, and work with our partner divisions, whether it's in the city departments or other community-based resources to address those issues. Regular communication from our outreach office to our neighborhood contacts is essential to keep them informed of public meetings and new programs and initiatives that might affect them. Our department has resumed issuing a monthly neighborhood newsletter across the back fence, which is distributed electronically every month. In addition, we've really stepped up our neighborhood info email notifications, which provides our neighborhood contacts with upcoming meeting notifications, events, neighborhood leadership training opportunities, planning and zoning, design review and board of adjustment meetings, and other city news. In our neighborhood revitalization area, our office will continue to assist neighborhoods with the coordination of property and alley cleanups or utilizing the paint reuse program for fence and wall repainting. In a few moments, Mike will be discussing the Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative our staff and internal partners are proposing as a means to connect residents and neighborhood businesses with city staff and the programs our city offers to assist in sustaining Mesa neighborhoods. With collaboration and partnership, our coordinators will continue and they will participate in interdepartmental neighborhood action teams, which the chief will be talking about shortly, to enhance coordinated and timely response to neighborhood issues. We'll be assisting other departments, sending information through our resident contact email list, and we'll continue staffing internal and external committees, such as the United Way Pride Committee, as well as our Leadership Center Solvit Mediation Committee. We also feel it's important to get our neighborhoods involved up front during the planning and zoning process, and therefore our staff works with a developer to provide them with resident contacts for registered neighborhood and homeowners association contacts to fulfill their citizen participation plan. We assist developers in locating a neighborhood facility upon their request, and we'll continue to be involved in those issues that and projects that are deemed to have a high impact on surrounding neighborhoods. And I'll turn it over to Mike, who'll talk about our strong Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative.
Good morning, Vice Mayor Walters, members of council. I'll be discussing the next component, which Kerry mentioned is the new Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative. The primary goal of this program is to preserve and strengthen Mesa's neighborhoods by providing residents and businesses with education, training, and access to various resources, existing city resources, to address neighborhood issues. One important distinction that I want to make between this program as compared to past programs that Neighborhood Services has provided in conjunction with its partners is that this program is intended to, rather than address neighborhoods that are on what we considered in the past to be on the cusp, where they were starting to show some signs of perhaps some decline, this program was specifically designed to be flexible enough to tailor-make programs to any neighborhood, any Mesa neighborhood across the city. The Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative is designed to be a four-week effort working within these designated neighborhood areas. Another distinction, important distinction between this and past programs is the general size of the neighborhoods that we would be working with. In the past, neighborhood sizes, these projects have averaged half a mile to three quarters of a square mile. In this case, the Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative, we're proposing that we're going to reduce that size so that we have more one-on-one interaction with residents in the neighborhoods, to about 6 to 8 city blocks, residential blocks. So it'll be a much smaller size than past efforts. Staff proposes to conduct one event per council district within the first 12 months of the program. The intent, following some evaluation of that first 12 months, is to expand to 2 events per council district in subsequent years. Again, the overall intent of the program, the Building Strong Neighbors Initiative, is to encourage collaboration among residents, businesses, city staff, and external agencies, nonprofit groups, and whatnot, that we have partnered with in the past to address neighborhood issues. I'd now like to provide kind of a brief outline regarding how a typical Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative will be conducted. 2 weeks prior to beginning the actual event in the neighborhood, the initiative would begin by neighborhood outreach staff conducting door-to-door surveys throughout the designated neighborhood. Again, this door-to-door method of surveying we found is most useful in beginning those one-on-one relationships with the residents right off the bat. Basically, the purpose of these surveys is, again, to identify the issues, the salient issues in the neighborhood prior to us actually beginning the program, so that we have kind of a general idea of those types of services, resources that we're going to be targeting for this area. Following the door-to-door survey, that two-week period, we'll prepare the survey, kind of take a look at the results of that. We will have an initial kickoff meeting in the neighborhood where we'll invite the residents, all of the residents within those boundaries, discuss the results of the survey, share those results with the residents and business owners, the local neighborhood-based businesses in that area, and make sure through kind of a table event or what we call an expo that residents, businesses will be able to basically walk around during the meeting and discuss and chat and learn about the different current existing city services and programs that might be able to assist them in addressing their issues. Again, a big component of this initial meeting will just be to provide kind of an awareness and an education to the residents and local neighborhood-based businesses about the existing city resources that are available. Try to develop a game plan, kind of an action plan, if you will, to work with residents. We would encourage them to form resident teams, resident action teams, similar to what we've done in the past. We found that to be a very successful model. Again, keeping with the resident-driven philosophy, we feel it's important that the residents work directly in the partnership with city staff and some of the external agencies to affect positive change in the neighborhood. I want to go over briefly some of the examples of the existing city resources that Neighborhood Services, in conjunction with its internal partners, feel that we could bring to the table and bring to these neighborhoods to affect those positive changes. Solid waste clean sweep containers, as you're all aware, a very popular program. We're fortunate enough, again, through a partnership with Solid Waste, to be able to provide a designated number of those containers during that four-week period. Code compliance, education, and awareness. Again, depending upon the neighborhood that we're working in at the time, if code compliance violations are evident prior to beginning work in that neighborhood, code compliance staff would be invited to take a major role in kind of explaining, going through and educating and increasing the awareness of the residents within that neighborhood of the existing city codes, making sure that they're aware. We plan or propose to have code officers within that area hang courtesy violation notices, again, just to increase the awareness of any types of violations that the property owners may have, give them a period of time. And at that point, we would bring in perhaps the clean sweep containers, if we're talking about perhaps an improper excessive outside storage issue, to allow residents an opportunity to voluntarily abate those violations. Of course, Neighborhood Watch and some of the other various crime prevention programs have always been an important resource that we've partnered with the police department to provide. And within the Building Stronger Neighborhoods initiative, it would be no exception. We'd, of course, invite the crime prevention unit as well as other police resources to, again, increase awareness of the existence of the Block Watch program, the Apartment Watch program, and encourage residents to participate in those programs. Fire department through the fire life safety education and community emergency response teams, again, just to provide some education and awareness to residents regarding these programs and encourage their participation. Some of the various parks and recreation programs that are offered currently by the library, the arts and cultural programs that are out there and available to residents. We found that in the past, working with neighborhood groups, there's often perhaps a lack of awareness, a lack of understanding about the availability of these programs. So we feel through the Building Stronger Neighborhood initiative that this would be one mechanism, a vehicle to increase that awareness. Outreach coordinators under the current proposal would be required to maintain office hours throughout the duration of the four-week period working in the neighborhood, and typically those office hours, we're looking right now at the schedule of that, but it would perhaps be two or three nights per week where the coordinator that's assigned to that particular area would maintain a two-hour, 5 to 7 p.m. Window of office hours, literally right in the neighborhood so that the residents wouldn't have to come to a city facility. They could basically speak with the outreach coordinator for that area, and any issues, any concerns that they might have could be addressed immediately by that coordinator. And, of course, we'd continue to rely on the outstanding partnership that we've been able to develop with the police department through the various police resources that they offer. And with that, I would like to turn the rest of the presentation, or the next segment of the presentation, over to Chief Gascon.
Good morning, Vice Mayor and City Council members. What I'd like to do is, very, very briefly, I'd like to give you a summary of where I think we are today and where we need to go. The police department's had a long history through the community action teams of going on and working with neighborhood nuisances and working on an ad hoc basis with the various departments in the city. The problem with that approach is that we get very mixed results, as you all know. We're trying to look for a more coordinated approach to how we do business today. There's no question that there is a nexus between nuisances and the neglect in neighborhoods and overall crime. What I'd like to do very briefly is just show you some of the examples of some of the work that has been done already. When there's some coordination, we need to be obviously, what we're going to push for here today is to get a more comprehensive approach to the delivery of city services. I can show you, for instance, we have a couple of examples here. And there are some photos that I'm going to show you very quickly of cases that have been worked out of the Red Mountain District And I'm not going to read the PowerPoint for you. I know you can read that yourself. But if you can see, there's a picture, for instance, one particular example, and we're not citing the address, but, you know, you have access to that location if you wanted to know a little further information. But that's a typical location that we have had problems with, and that's sort of the before photo there. And as we're scrolling through, you can see some of the neglect in that particular neighborhood. And what occurs, obviously, when you have a neighborhood, when you allow conditions to reach this level, is that you have a sense of lawlessness and just, you know, quite frankly, civilization breaking down. And that's the type of problems that our officers and certainly other city employees are facing with around our city today. This particular example, when we work in a coordinated effort, we have significant decrease in code violations. Graffiti was reported sooner. We had a 50% reduction in police calls to that particular area there. And there are some other photos of the process now involving the neighborhood, because I think it's also important to get the neighborhood involved in cleaning up their own services. I think we would be making a horrible mistake if we have city personnel do all this work. People have to learn how to protect and take care of their own businesses also. Here's another example, again, that I'm going to lift to you, and very quickly we'll scroll through it. Go ahead. It was in a particular abandoned house, and we had an owner there that initially was not being very cooperative. You can see the condition of that house inside the house. Obviously, there were people that were living in there in some form, drinking and doing other activities in there. Right, John. Yeah, let's go ahead, John. This particular was another example of CAD teams working with other city departments and going after the owner, and basically getting the location to be cleaned up. Go ahead, John. Again, you can see their community members working together. Here's what I think what the bottom line is today. I think there's probably three options that we can take today if we really want to get serious about taking care of business in this neighborhood problems. We can continue the current process where we have police community action teams dealing with a lot of this quality of life issues, and on an ad hoc basis seeking out the help from other city departments or working with other city departments where they are the ones that get notified of the problem beforehand. That's the current process, and I think everybody's aware of it, that it gives very mixed results. Another possibility is to continue to have, without spending any additional funding, is to have the community action teams, but then to the extent that we can, having all the other city departments assign personnel on a part-time basis to work with the CAD teams so that we're all coordinated working on the problems. That will not cost any additional expenses, but it will at least coordinate the current resources that we have. Well, the third option, and it's one that I would that I would recommend that you explore, because I'm not sure that the funding is there to do so, but I think it's something that we ought to explore, would be to have eventually to put dedicated personnel working with the CAD teams from the various city departments, so that by police station we have teams of people that can very aggressively go after these problems. My recommendation to you would be today that we take option number two that has no expenses, but at the same time direct us, meaning the police department and the rest of the city departments, to work together in exploring option number three. I think one of the pieces that we have to also look at, and I know that city prosecutor will go and be the next part of this presentation, but there has to be stronger consequences to not playing by the rules. Currently, we have a system that is very weak on the enforcement side, and the consequences, quite frankly, are not significant enough. So sometimes you have some business owners and you have some landlords that they view dealing with not taking care of business, just the cost of doing business, and, you know, dealing with some of the small fines and the things that that we can do today. I think that on the long run, we have to consider very strongly how do we beef out the prosecution side of the house, by creating greater consequences in order to really get the attention of the people that are not willing to play by the rules. And I'd like to turn it over to the city prosecutor.
I'm also the AV guy today, so bear with me. Just
and I'll try to help you here.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay. This will be.
We call that person Vanna.
Wow, and I thought AV guy was bad. Come on. What the chief is talking about is in beefing up the prosecution side of this is community prosecution. And this is not the first time I've come before you and talked about community prosecution. I believe in one of my first meetings here almost 3.5 years ago, you wanted to ask me about community prosecution. So what is community prosecution? What you've heard today from neighborhood services and the police departments is the beginning of that. But I want to stress to you, it's only the beginning of that. It's identifying the community needs. It's providing the police aspect and the enforcement and bringing the city departments together. That's the beginning. But how do you get to community prosecution? First, when I define it for you, what is it? It's long-term proactive partnerships. It's picking targeted areas out, and it's community-driven. How do those two work together? What do I mean when I say it's community-driven and targeted areas? What we find works best when it comes to community prosecution is working with neighborhood outreach to find out what the citizens in their neighborhood think the main problem is. It can be anywhere from not enough streetlights to a crack house, to a landlord who has substandard living and doesn't care what goes on in their apartment complex. It can be any one of those things. What we do is, as the community prosecutors, we try to take this proactive stop. Instead of sitting back in our office, waiting for neighborhood outreach, code, building safety, fire, and police to bring us cases, we go to them. And what we say is, how can we work with you to abate this problem? Because if you don't abate this problem, this is where we're headed. But what we're really saying in community prosecution is we're trying to avoid prosecution. And we can map this out for you. We can work out an agreement with you. We can make it very clear what you need to do to work with us to take care of your problems so that we don't end up in a court system and in a court process that you don't want to end up in. That's community prosecution in its essence. It's being proactive. It's laying out exactly how we can work together to solve your problems. But if you don't solve those problems, there will be a consequence. There will be enforcement. For lack of a better term, there will be a hammer to make sure you follow through on the agreement that you've provided us. The goal is to prevent crime. The goal is to address community needs at the neighborhood level. I have seen this work in actuality. I have seen the situations where you have city departments, city prosecutor's office, sitting in neighborhood meetings, and they're talking about problems in a proactive manner where it's working together. It's community negotiation. It's trying to work together with our problems and draw them out so we know exactly what you want and how we can help and being realistic in how we can help and what you need to do to address that. We've reviewed many models, and I can't take credit for this. To be honest with you, I've only reviewed one of these models, and that's because I worked in Phoenix, Arizona. Jackie Jeffrey from my office has reviewed and talked to people in each one of these offices to find out how best we would do community prosecution when we're ready to do community prosecution. And part of that being ready is, as the chief said, at some point determining what resources we would need and seeing if that's viable for the city. Because in the 3.5 years I've been here, we've never been in a situation, and this council's never been in a situation, where they had money to spend on everything they wanted to spend the money on. So part of what we have to do from community prosecution standpoint is provide you with that framework to show you how it can work in the future, and then you can prioritize that in your budget-making goals. That's a task I'm glad I don't have. The types of projects we deal with, nuisance abatement, drug and prostitution initiatives, graffiti, youth initiative, quality of life crimes. What I mean by quality of life crimes, it's getting down to the neighborhood, what makes their life better, and how can we help you? Have we done it on a small scale in certain areas? Yes. Have I seen it work in certain areas? Yes. I can think of working with two different fire code situations. One we were brought in at the very end, and it was a very messy situation, ended up in the newspapers, wasn't fun for anybody, and didn't end well. Another one we were brought in the beginning where we went along on an inspection, and we talked with the owner, and we described what needed to be done, an adequate time frame to get it done, and what would happen if it didn't get done. And we never talked to that individual again. And what fire told me was 95% of those code revision changes were made within the first 2 weeks, a type of compliance they had never seen before from this in particular owner. What's next? Obviously, I've already touched on the budget issue, and that's more for you guys than for me, apart from us laying out exactly what we would need. But we are, I should say we, Jackie has also worked very hard on a code revision. And probably, I would think, early in the 2007, January, February timeframe, we'll be bringing to you a comprehensive code revision to better protect our neighborhoods, increase punishments, perhaps a suggestion that we need these types of cases to go directly to city court to an actual judge as opposed to a hearing officer. Why? Because when people walk into court, all of a sudden it means something more to them. When they realize they're going to have to go in front of a judge and not a hearing officer and it's more than a $50 citation, all of a sudden they listen. When they sit in the room with that prosecutor who's drawing out the deal with them and saying, this is how we avoid coming to deal with us on the criminal line, they listen. And those types of code revisions to provide us the tools to provide you with what you really want, which is better neighborhoods and neighbors that have a mechanism to help themselves. And that's community prosecution at its essence. It's working with all these city groups to not only prevent crime and make our neighborhoods better, but to provide a system where we all come together and work together, and they don't have to go to six different shops to get their answers. And that individual that we're dealing with doesn't get to play fire off police, off code, off building safety, off the prosecutor. They have one person that they're dealing with in a coordinated effort, and there's no game plan. They understand their responsibilities. They understand the time frame. They understand our expectations. And if we work together on that with a little bit of flexibility, that's always a tough word for the prosecutor and me, a little bit of flexibility, we can get this job done. I even know what my next slide says. It says, what questions do you have?
Gosh, where were you when I was raising my five kids? Okay.
I don't want to answer that question.
Fine, Vanna, just be that way. First of all, we're going to take questions. I think everybody's got questions here. But just to comment first on the budgetary issues, it has been my feeling all the time I've been on the council, you don't take budget issues out of a budget cycle. Because when you do that, you see them out of context. And everybody can make a pitch for why theirs is really important. And before long, you have a budget that's ballooned out of control, and you've made promises to people, and it has impact. So all of the things that have budgetary impacts, as far as I'm concerned, need to come back during the budget cycle. That doesn't mean they aren't important. I really appreciate all of those, and I'll make my comments later on. But I just wanted to say that about the things with budgetary impacts. All right. I saw a lot of people taking notes and with questions and everything. And so who wants to go first? Mr. Griswold.
I think the multi-task force is the way to do it. I've dealt with slum landlords in our area, and, you know, it's hard when they get $50 fines, take 6 months to give them, and they just keep going and going. And it's hard when you hold the police accountable totally when it's supposed to be a meth house, but you can't prove it, and the neighbors are all complaining. I had one in $400,000 homes where they're on the roof with crossbows shooting neighborhood dogs and, you know, supposedly dealing drugs, et cetera, and going on and people getting, you know, and it looked just like a mess. And finally, the water department figured out they hadn't paid their water bill. We shut it off, and they got them evicted with the health department and cleaned out the whole thing. So it takes a multi-task force, not just holding the police accountable. And I think that's a way to have a better city. And also working with people. Someone's having a tough time and their husband's sick or something, going over, loaning them tools and helping them. And we've even had neighborhood groups that go over there, help clean up their home and paint it for them and haul the trash away. We have some neighborhoods over by Caballero that, you know, have couches and chairs and piles of junk out in front of all the fourplexes. Crime amazingly rises in those areas. You get a clean sweep, you get a big bin out there, neighbors get together on a weekend and clean up everything, all of a sudden crime goes down, people take pride in their neighborhood. So I'm looking forward to the program, but I tend to very much agree with the Vice Mayor that you don't start new budgetary ones right now, but I think communicating between our own departments is a great step in the right direction. The next one would be some kind of slum landlord law. So.
Who wants to be next? Mr. Whelan.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. You know, we talk about not being able to make this decision until we talk about the budget, but realistically, We're so understaffed in the neighborhood office. We're so understaffed in the police department that we have to talk about these in financial issues. We've got to make some priorities towards neighborhoods. We're asking people to do things that they can't manage. I mean, this city is 130 square miles, and 30 or 40 square miles of it is aging. And there's a whole new demographic that we have to deal with. So I agree with you that we don't talk about it today, but I'm concerned that we're just asking you to do more with less, and it's just not going to work until we throw some resources at it. End of speech. Chief, in the police department, I know that you need better crime analysis in order to work through some of these problems. The information sharing is just not there yet.
Right. Yeah, one of the problems that we're trying to address is we're trying to get our records management system to work. It looks like we may be able to fix it. I don't have a complete answer for you yet because it's very complicated. We've had some people come from the outside. In fact, we had Coplink, which is an Arizona company that created a software system that has the ability to go through disparate databases and hook them up together and do a linkage analysis for you to see whether information that may appear to be disparate on its face actually is connected, and they can compute thousands of pieces of information in a matter of seconds. We want to make sure that our records management system is not going to become a silo and that it actually would be able to work with this kind of database. I'm also having someone from Oracle will be here later this month also, because we do have an Oracle platform in our system, and have them take a look. Because until I really have a good grasp of what we have in our records management system, I'm really unable to see whether we can take this to the next step. But you're absolutely right. All this stuff begins to be connected, and we have to resolve this in order to be able to push the right information to the vehicles in the field for the police officers to function. I'm not quite ready yet to give you an assessment of that piece, but that will be an integral part of anything that we do in the future.
The other situation that it seems like we keep falling further behind, we have an active neighborhood watch community, but it doesn't seem like that the participation, other than the block captain, is strong. The block captains, I'm sure, are pretty frustrated in the fact that they try to get information out, yet they don't have the cooperation. Perhaps the block watch system is somewhat broken in the requirements that we, in my opinion, that we may be too tough on what we require for it to be effective.
I think it needs rejuvenation, and that is the reason why we're starting a two-prong approach. As a matter of fact, this month we're starting with the first meeting of our community forums. We're structuring several community forums throughout the city. They're based on demographics. We have a seniors community forum. We're going to have a business. We will have ethnic-based community forums. Those forums are going to give us sort of the 30,000 feet above the ground look at the community. There will be citywide perspective through the lenses of that particular community. The second tier of this is our community police advisory boards, which we will kick off somewhere between January and February. Those will be community neighborhood-based groups that will work with the area, the station commanders, to work on the neighborhood problems. The selection of the people in these two groups is going to be based on people that have basically bring two things to the table. Number one, that they are not just self-appointed community leaders, but that in fact they are people that have groups that they can lead. And then the second group is that they have the time and the ability and the desire to work. So we believe that this two-prong approach is going to take the Neighborhood Watch Program and sort of raise the bar and bring them along. We're still going to need the Neighborhood Watch Program. That is a real critical component of our community policing efforts, because that's really on a block-by-block area. But what is missing is the link in between that block-by-block and the wider look within the community leadership to hook up different programs and to be able to hook up all the other resources that may be out there that we're not being able to exploit to the greatest advantage.
Thank you. One of the successes of the community action teams is the ability of the residents to get direct contact with the teams.
Right.
It's very frustrating for a citizen to go through the communication center to report items. You know, sometimes they get talked out of reporting items.
Correct.
As we've found. And is, I'm not putting that on communication, but it's just the handle of the amount of calls. I would hope that we can work on a situation to where I know the community action teams are the catch-all for everything that goes on within the department, but somehow if there's a better system of the residents communicating or at least the leaders of the particular groups communicating.
Well, I think that we'll be, first of all, we're very committed to the CAP teams. Our CAP teams have done incredible work in the past, and we have some very, very dedicated people performing those functions, so we're committed to continuing to enhance their ability, and that's why we're here today, quite frankly, trying to get that directive where everybody in the city can work together. But the community police advisory boards would be working with the commanders, and quite frankly, for the first time probably in this police department's history, to actually, from a neighborhood side, from the consumer side, to determine what are the goals, what are going to be the objectives for the policing in those particular neighborhoods. Obviously, there has to be a balance. You may have a community that comes in, you know, loud music is the most important thing in our life, but half a block away we're having shootings. And we're going to have to decide, well, you know, loud music is important, and we understand and we feel your pain, but when we have a body laying on the other side, we're going to have to investigate that first. So it's a balancing approach. But what hasn't occurred in the past is where community members can come together and really kind of look, okay, here are the resources, here are the problems, and actually collaborate in the development of strategies for the police department so that if we say, look, we're going to make loud music a very, very important thing in our scheme of things here, then everybody understands we're going to be shifting some recently. We're going to shift some resources to deal with loud music, but that may translate that we're not going to answer the barking dog. You know, it'd be kind of a balance, and then everybody in the community understands this is what we're doing. We're going to handle the barking dogs ourselves. You police are going to help us deal with the loud music. And that's really the essence of community policing, is getting people to understand how they can use the resources that they're paying for, and then commit into that understanding.
The broken window theory prompts me to ask if this community is ready for a housing code, but we've asked that before, and that takes a charter change, and that's a long-term educational process that I think that we need to look at. I don't know around the country what works, whether a housing code in the long run works. Kyle, you may have some information on that, but I think that's something that if we're going to start looking at the future, we really need to look at that. And rather than go to the citizens with an idea without educating, I think we need to start the education process today as to how that could help without limiting the value of private home ownership.
I could tell you from a personal experience, and of course, different city, different set of facts, but code enforcement and housing codes do work. I can tell you that I have personally, as a captain running some districts in some very tough parts of L.A., we were able to shut down drug houses, not through the drug activity, but through the code enforcement of very strict building codes. So they work. It's a tremendous tool, and I urge you to consider it because, as it was indicated here earlier, sometimes the police department is not going to be able to walk in through the criminal side of the house. But you will have the fire codes, you will have the building codes that become tremendous tools in order to deal with it with a neighborhood nuisance.
And then, I'm sorry to be so long, Vice Mayor, but the last issue that all of us are concerned with, and that's the proliferation of halfway houses in our community and the perception that there's crime related to those halfway houses. I know they're all not that way, but I would hope that we could start working on that process to at least identify what we've got in the community, and find out where we go from there.
And I can tell you preliminarily, and we just sent Vice Mayor Claudia Walters some preliminary work, it appears that there's a tremendous correlation between the location of these houses and crimes. We have mapped out the houses, we have mapped out the crime around those houses, and there are significant incidents of crime around those houses. Now, the argument and the reason why I'm being careful, and I said it appears to be, is because these are also many of these neighborhoods also are neighborhoods that have many other problems. So we're now trying to take it to the next step, and here's where our records management system is not helping us a great deal. We're trying to correlate arrest and people that are being arrested and see if they reside in many of these houses. understanding that there may be some infirmities on that, because a lot of times these people won't tell you where they really live because they move quite often. But just on its face, just a straight-out mapping of the locations and the crime around the locations, there's a significant amount of crime around those locations. And interestingly enough, although most of this is in the west part of the city, we've noticed that there's isolated cases more in the eastern part of the city, and where those places are, you can see also a significant amount of criminal activity around those places, and yet in a more isolated basis. So I would say that definitely there may be a correlation there. And I know that Vice Mayor Walters is working in some initiatives with Congress and our state legislator, and I don't know if you want to talk about those.
I think I've asked for that to come back to us at a study session, because we need to get a reminder. We're operating under federal laws on this, and I know that there is this strong perception in the community that the city council could pass laws that were different, that we don't have the same laws that other people have. We actually do, although we just found out a new one that Phoenix has passed, which has to do with people who are under DOC control, which I've asked for us to get a copy of that and to bring it back for the council to look at. They just recently passed that, and so that's one thing that we could do. But so much of this is federal law, and we have to be so careful. We're not trying to discriminate against people who have disabilities, and we have to walk that line. But I think that there are issues that the chief just pointed out that I'm very aware of in the areas that I represent, and these are not – the problem is that ADA classifies everybody together. And so once you start talking about this, people think that you're trying to deal with grandma who has Alzheimer's, who's in a senior care facility, because that falls in the same category, or people, a child who has Down syndrome, who's in a group care home. That isn't what we're talking about at all. And I can't recall ever getting a phone call on those kinds of uses. So we're talking about what are known as halfway houses for people who are in rehabilitation of some kind, and under ADA, they have protections as well. And so we're trying to look at that and see if there's any way we can address it. But actually, it's very much a federal issue, although I know every one of us gets calls on it.
And the largest thing is, it seems like, because we've had some history with these houses, we're careful because of previous lawsuits. But other communities are not. Other communities just say no. And we end up getting the proliferation. I think that's the frustration.
Yeah, and we have, just so that you know, not proportionally, raw numbers, we have more of these houses in the city of Mesa than any other city in the state. As a matter of fact, we have significantly larger number than Phoenix does, which is really interesting.
Let me respond to that for a minute, because some of that is that we have done a better job of keeping track of where things are than any other community. And you know, I'm not trying to dump on Phoenix, but including Phoenix, and so the rumors are out there that if you call Scottsdale and you want to start a one of these homes, that they just say to you, no, you can't come to our community. Well, let me know, because I'll be the first one to help file a lawsuit. If you actually know somebody who had that happen, I'll help them file that lawsuit, because that's federal law, and we all have those federal laws that we have to. Now, the rumors are out there, they're big time out there. But actually, any person who has had that experience, I want to know about it, because I'll get them in touch with the attorney. This is not a Mesa issue. This is an issue that is a federal issue. And I think sometimes we got harmed. I think we did the right thing by tracking where everybody was, but we got harmed because then the perception became exactly what you're talking about, Chief, that we had more of these uses than anybody else. So I'm not defending the uses. I'm just saying that it creates a perceptual issue, which is a really difficult perceptual issue. Councilmember Jones.
Well, so we have more documented halfway houses than anybody else that are known to be in existence. Chief, I'm one of those fortunate ones that I get the gunshots over the fence. I get the loud noise. I get the whole thing all in one package. I'm fortunate, I guess. But a concern about the loud noise ordinance situation. I understand the priorities, but historically it's been put on such a low priority that there's no response whatsoever, when it could just take a 5 or 10 minute shot to stop by and say, hey, here's the rules you got to follow, and they can leave and go take care of something that's going to take hours of work.
Right.
And that's how I'd like to take a look at that balance. When you talked about the options of creating the team, the combined team, to your recommendation now because of the budget, but I would certainly like to work in transitioning to three to where we have some dedicated work on that. I know we've had recently a blight team working together where we've used this concept, and it's been effective, useful. We know it will make a lot of difference. We just have to make it more broad-based, and that's going to require some resources. A concern for me is, to the general public, how are they going to be able to interface with and get responses? Right now, they either will just call the base police number or they'll call code compliance, and that department, as it stands right now, will come out and just, well, this is how far my responsibility goes. This is all I can do. Sorry. Recent cases, when we go out to our game night, we visit neighborhoods, when we go to block watch parties and such, it was overwhelmingly a response of certain issues that they're concerned that they expressed. Okay, we have people sleeping in a backyard, we know they're in there, there's a whole bunch of people staying there, there's rats around, they go in through the alleyway, call code compliance, if you can't see it from the street, we're not doing anything, and then if we don't witness something, there's nothing we can do, and yet the people are frustrated, they're saying, we're telling you it's going on, can we at least get the resources or the people there at the right time? That frustration. Another example that I know is going on right now is a gentleman who's doing auto painting in his backyard on weekend business. He works in an auto shop during the week, and on the weekend he's doing his own stuff, but he's painting with toxic paint in the backyard, and the neighbors have to go inside because they choke on it. And yet, when they call code compliance, well, can you see it from the street? No. Well, then that's out of our jurisdiction. I said, but it's a hazard. And they need to have a central place where if they make a complaint, it just doesn't get dropped. Well, that's not our job. That's the concern I need to have a follow-through on. How do we get there?
And that's part of the beauty of community prosecution. When you have that, I mean, part of the job of that community prosecutor is to be at the neighborhood meetings, to be at the block watch. That's why it's different than anything we do. I mean, the vast majority of my prosecutors, they work with the court. And they're assigned to a court, and when the court's in session, they're in session, and when they're not, they're in their office doing paperwork and whatever to prepare for court. Community prosecutor is out there at the neighborhood meetings, at the block watches, seeing what you're seeing. He is that contact, he or she is that contact person, and when they talk to him, it's that community prosecutor's job to say, you know what, I need to talk to neighborhood services about this, I need to talk to the CAT team about this, and I need to talk to code about this. And if I can't get the answer from code, then I need to go here. It's so that individual is not calling up six different departments. They're talking to one person. That's the biggest complaint I hear, is I go to code and I get this. I go to fire, I get this. I come to you and I get this. What am I supposed to do? And that's the real beauty. See, I get excited about it. That's the real beauty about community prosecution when you can do it to its full extent, is it gives the neighbors and the neighborhoods a place to go where they, I don't want to say a one-stop shop, but a contact point to begin to distribute the resources effectively, so that they don't get six different answers to the same question. That's exactly what we would like to see it do, and that's part of as I agree with Councilmember Walters, we understand that's part of the budget process, but if this program is to work, the beginning steps you have seen, the end step is this community prosecution, because it provides not only the hub to the wheel, but it provides the wheel and the brake. Okay. It's the wheel and the brake.
And, you know, probably given the current budgetary situation and the fact that it's not reasonable to try to deal with budget issues today, the police department's there all the time. The CAT teams are there all the time. And the CAT teams certainly could become the central point, and they are by default, quite frankly. It's just not working well because it's not well coordinated. But there is no reason why, that you couldn't have a combination of neighborhood services and the CAT teams become the central point, and we bring the prosecution in at the appropriate time, because clearly they don't have the resources to do that today.
And
by the way, police communication, I agree with Mr. Whalen, it's not the place to have send people to call. Has to be at the station level.
It needs to be at the station level. But I'm going more along, again, we need to have it centralized so that people know who they can call,
right.
whether it's even through the council office, okay, and then that could be the contact. But we need to have the program set up so there is a central contact. Here's my concerns. Obviously, you're not going to intercept 911 stuff, but for basic, right, hey, here's my problem. Let city staff be the one making all the contacts to get it.
You know, one of the things that has worked really well in some cities is a 311 system. Obviously, again, that would be a future budgetary area, but a 311 system would be a way to put all the community services in a single place, and that's what many cities are doing today.
And we've had some tremendous success with our CAT officers, and the whole time that I've been here in different neighborhoods, where our CAT officers have done a tremendous job in resolving certain situations. But part of the frustration, too, is a clear definition of how things are to take place. We'll have a CAT officer in one area hand go on a different understanding of policy. You'll have a code compliance officer in another neighborhood, and they don't. Not everybody's on the same page. And we need to have some more clear, concise, this is the rules, this is how it's enforced, this is how, so we have that understanding. Because I can go into a neighborhood and say, well, hey, this is what our rules are, and they say, but that's not what they tell me. Whether it's code, police, or something else, they're getting different responses from our departments.
I think if you were to direct us to do number two and number three, one of that would be that we would be working together to train our teams to understand what is it that we can and cannot do today, because you're absolutely right. There is a lot of misunderstanding even as to the law. We're probably doing things today that could be done a lot better from a legal stance, and we would have prosecutors come in and teach and train our CAD teams and our code enforcement people, so they understand what are the restrictions, so that everybody's working off the same page.
And along those same lines, a request that we have better coordination between our block watch parties and our neighborhood outreach office. That was a frustration when I would go to block watch parties, and I would say, well, where are some of our other city departments to work with? And I understand block watch is a nationwide deal, and they have certain guidelines of how they operate, but could we not mesh those better together? Made that
Absolutely.
Request before, that people out there in the city, they're not going to differentiate between Block Watch and a registered neighborhood, that organization, although Block Watch theoretically just fits inside a registered neighborhood for the whole group, but it's specific to the block. And I would like to see a better integration of that. When they have Block Watch parties, let it be the
city
neighborhood outreach
there,
all inclusive.
With their variety of services.
Right. Let's see. Make sure I go through all my notes here. When you talked about getting new codes, working on the new codes to bring forward to the council early in the year, are we going to get any preview of that so that we can have input? Sometimes we just have something brought to us and we're trying to digest it, and it would be nice if we had it, if we were in the process along the way, since we're ultimately going to be approving it.
How does this code revision is working is we started out by not only looking at our code, but looking at some of these other cities that have these neighborhood codes. And then we constructed it within the city prosecutor's, the city attorney's office. Then we sent it out to all of our partners in the city, and they are getting back to us with their feedback. As we incorporate that feedback, there's absolutely no problem with us providing that for you to review and take a look at and provide suggestions long before we bring it to you. That's part of the reason this process takes so long, is we're trying to do it so that by the time we get there, you have everyone's input, everybody's happy with the final product, and it's not something you're seeing for the first time. Because this document in and of itself already is about that thick. And if we were to provide that to you on the Tuesday or the Thursday, a week before the meeting, that's not realistic. We will try to get that to you, plenty of time for you to have a full review of it and to ask whatever questions you have of us. I'd rather answer those questions beforehand than have a lot of concern, at the meeting.
And I'm sure we'll get into this more at another point when we're reviewing again on the noise ordinance and stuff, but the way the ordinance reads now, it consists of a party of five or more. Where do we get with if it's just a couple of people with the stereo blasting out of their car and that doesn't fall under the noise ordinance, so there's no real penalty? That's just, okay, they're disturbing the peace, and then you have to have a victim and the whole mesh. How are we going to address that? Just to kill noise altogether. So,
Councilmember Jones, let me try. I have a copy of the noise ordinance here, and again, it does depend on what the hypothetical or the fact situation is. And the one you just posed with regard to noise coming from moving vehicles, the noise ordinance says that it is prohibited by law, and it's a civil citation, not a criminal citation here. But we could cite for a civil violation if the noise coming from a vehicle can be heard outside the vehicle from 50 feet or more away from the vehicle, or if it disturbs the quiet, comfort, or repose of any person in the vicinity. So that's where we get to your comment about there not being a victim. But you can cite if the noise can be heard away 50 feet from the vehicle. So there's two different criteria that can be used to enforce that portion of the noise ordinance. We are, however, looking at this, and we're going to also collect, we're now collecting noise ordinances from other cities to see, okay, how does ours compare to theirs? But again, that's only one small portion of the noise ordinance. I can give you a copy of the entire ordinance if you'd like to look at it.
But historically, the response has always been, we have to have a victim. We won't do anything unless we have a victim, somebody who's willing to do something. But what you're telling me is we don't always have to have a victim.
It's not required by the ordinance, so I think we can talk to the police. And again, that will get to the balancing with regard to noise versus other crimes and other offenses that they're dealing with.
That is correct, but as I understand it, though, it has to be committed in the officer's presence. So
correct.
If you don't have a victim, the officer has to be there when the noise is occurring.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, and it comes back to it's the bottom of the priority. 2 hours later, by the time an officer might show up, they may have finally gone.
Absolutely.
Whereas if it would be possible to take 5 minutes, boom, hey, you guys knock it off. But we can address that one later. One question for Carrie. How often do we verify our neighborhood and HOA contacts?
Actually, we're going through that process right now, and I think it's completed, right? We're actually going through the database right now, and we should do it on an annual basis, and we're going through that right now because we did have some old contacts, and so we're redoing those right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
Trying to climb back up to a little higher overview than where Kyle had us all really important, but let me just try to step it back up to a little higher level and start off by saying in your code revisions and your review of the codes, from my perspective, I'd like you to concentrate on public safety ones first, health ones second, nuisance ones third. Okay, I mean, just from my list of priorities, I mean, noise is important, but it doesn't rank up there with toxic fumes from a paint shop, which doesn't rank up there with crack houses. So that's my level of priority. Support the ideas, most of what you've presented here today. Have a little bit of concern with some of the premises underlying the community prosecution that you put in your memo, particularly the fact that insufficient sentences and overcrowded jails. I'm not really sure that any of our judges have ever not sentenced somebody appropriate because we have a jail crowding problem, but you may know more about it than I do. And insufficient sentences, we can argue all day on whether or not that's a problem for pure drug possession. In the same area, I'm not comfortable. I'm not saying I couldn't get comfortable, but I'm not comfortable with the idea of the drug-free zone ordinance. I don't even like the crime-free apartment complex because I think when people make mistakes, we shouldn't isolate them and not let them integrate themselves back into the community. So I'm not real keen on saying we're going to create another criminal offense of trespassing because you were arrested and convicted of doing a drug deal in this area or having possession of marijuana in this area, so you can't ever return to this area. So just from that. But I think what's happened here today, and I think we have identified what I think is going to be the overriding challenge of the next 2 years for this council. And that is, we sort of defined in May the size of our financial box. We have determined within, you know, little margins on the side, what our resources are going to be and what we're going to have to deal with. And we have to now sit down and continually revise those prioritizations within that box. So when the vice mayor says, bring this to us in the budget process, that's perfectly appropriate, but it's not, we've just begun, I think, that process. We are in the middle of having to, and this is public safety. You know, at the last council retreat, public safety was number one on everybody's list. This is what we said we wanted to do. This is what we wanted to focus on. Well, if we mean that, then we're going to have to look for other things that are going on inside the box and say, that is not as important, and if we want to have community prosecution, we're going to have to do away with this. Or if we're going to want to have these neighborhood action teams fully staffed and fully funded, then we're going to have to make some adjustments elsewhere. That's not a pleasant process, but if we are serious about putting public safety first, which I am, then we need to make those kinds of difficult decisions. And so I think we really sit here today and identified the next 2 years and 2 months worth of work for this council. It's going to change in 2 years and 2 months, but for right now, that's our job. That's our biggest, most important, most critical responsibility for the next 2 years. So this presentation to me has brought that into very clear relief for everybody in the community. And as and John and Chief, as you start, and everyone else, as you start presenting your proposals, and particularly at Brian and Jamie and Chris's level, of course, Brian, I don't know what you do now. You've moved up a level, so you're probably just sitting back there at rest. But I haven't looked at the chart closely enough to know still financial services is under your direction. I'm sorry, but the point is that we, just as we said when we were talking about when we talked about the budget, if you want to add something back in, you need to identify where that money is going to come from by eliminating something else. Now, I'm not suggesting that the people on the front lines at this level say, why don't you cut this, and why don't you cut that in order to fund my project, but I do think those are the kinds of options that we need from our higher level administrators so that we have those options when those budget choices come to us. Not that we sit here during the budget process and say, you know, each one of us scribbling here and saying, gee, if I can find $50,000 from this and $20,000 from this. The budget process needs to have those kinds of choices presented to us. If the chief comes forward, John comes forward with a $2.2 million neighborhood action community prosecution program, okay, we know what we need. Where do we find that $2.2 million? Help us at least identify options and choices. And you did a great job of that for the election, identifying what was going to be in and what was going to be out. We need that same kind of thing. It's going to go on. It's a daily basis. It's a weekly basis. It's a yearly thing for us. But this is exciting stuff. But to get it, we've got to make some really difficult choices and decide whether or not we want to walk the talk on our public safety prioritization.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Most of my questions have already been addressed. I really am down to one. Everything that has been discussed here thus far has talked about coordination, communication, budgeting, and funding. Where are we going to find the money? How are folks going to communicate together? And it occurred to me that we are in the midst of a reorganization in the manager's office, Mr. Brady, and I was wondering how the reorganization of the city is going to affect the implementation of the coordination with some of these agencies, police, code compliance, tax, licensing. Is this going to facilitate that coordination? Is it going to impact it at all?
You know, the reorganization, I think, is been given more credit than it probably needs to. We're not overhauling government, as one headline suggested earlier this week. I just don't think I have that kind of power. And if I did, I wouldn't exercise it. Really, what the reorganization has really is what it's done is that we are pushing down the decision-making and accountability in this organization for the first time since I've been here. On Tuesday, when we reviewed the City Council agenda for November 20th, we had 30 people in the room. And because we had not just the top-level department managers, but now we've eliminated department managers, and we had department directors, which you probably do as division heads, and others in the room so that they could hear the questions and hear, be able to respond, and we could get a better feel for really what is happening and making sure we're doing a better job of bringing to you completed staff work. That is the beginning of what needs to happen. We need to make sure that all our departments are on the same page together. And I think the more we can push down the priorities, or understanding the priorities from this council down into the organization is important. My priority, and everybody that has come to a city manager's forum, whether it's a brown bag lunch or when I've gone out to the departments, they know today that the city manager is all about customer service and making sure that we understand the needs of our customers and we can deliver those services in an efficient way, but meeting their expectations. This is part of it. We have customers out there. We have the Irene Pines of the world out there today who are trying so desperately to work in their neighborhoods. We need to put our groups together so that we can be coordinated. Councilman Jones has mentioned to me these stories of where we are not on the same page sometimes. You know, and it's not for lack of effort. We have staff that are really trying to do their job, but sometimes they get caught in positions where they may feel like they don't have the authority of the jurisdiction to overstep it. And sometimes we as an organization do more of trying to be more risk adverse than really empowering our employees. And this concept here, frankly, is where we're trying to push down into the organization the idea that it's important to be sitting down together from a variety of different departments and multidisciplinary efforts. Option two on your chart is what we're going to do. We have to do that. Unless you tell me otherwise, we're doing option two. We are formalizing a process that for now, as the chief says, sometimes this happens on an ad hoc basis. We are formally going to have requirements where our four districts where the CAT teams reside are sitting down at the table establishing priorities with the neighborhood outreach folks, with the co-compliance folks. So they're sitting down and having that discussion. The difference is what we're suggesting to the council is we would be more effective, most likely, if we had a city prosecutor that was also assigned to those four districts that could be there at all the time and be able to work through those priorities. We don't have that resource today. But absent that, we're still going to go ahead and sit down because at least a discussion among those who are available is going to help. But even remember, Neighborhood Outreach only has three Neighborhood Outreach coordinators for the entire city plus one supervisor. We're stretched. And Councilman Rawls said it well. We have a certain box of services that we can live within. And I don't want to spoil Brian's presentation for next week, but I can tell you the bright lines in that box are very bright going into next year's budget. There's not room for new programs or projects. We had hoped there might be. There won't be. It is because a lot of other factors that are putting pressure on the city. The good news is we're probably going to be able to manage the budget, but that I don't know that we can add additional programs or services without, as Councilman Rawls suggested, two different approaches. Either you cut expenses somewhere else or you find new revenue sources somewhere else also. And frankly, we will have a proposal from Co-Compliance where they want to participate more actively in these neighborhood action teams. And they are going to come forward with some cost recovery, I think, that will help them be able to maybe add some resources to do that. But that's what it's about. That's what we're trying. One of the purposes of today's meeting was to say, here's what we've seen happen in the neighborhoods. It's a priority for the city staff. We've heard from the council it's a priority. We're trying to make sure you know that we're listening and hearing what you have to say. The chief has, you know, really rallied his folks, and they're already energized, but we're trying to bring everybody under the same tent to get going, and so that's what we want to do. We also wanted to give you, you know, here's the ideal of where we'd like to go with community prosecution if we had the resources, and if we're able to find some resources in the future, that would be where we'd want to go. We can't get there today. Let me go back to go back to one thing about the neighborhood outreach program, is I don't want this to go by the council without you understanding my priority of how these three neighborhood outreach coordinators are going to function and how they should relate to each one of you and what's going on in your department or your district. If you don't know who your neighborhood outreach coordinator is, for your district, we need to make sure you know that before the end of the day. They need to be, you need to have their cell phone numbers. If you get a call from a neighborhood president who's got a concern, those neighborhood presidents, first of all, should have the cell phone numbers that are neighborhood outreach coordinators. Those coordinators are going to be permanent, they're going to be assigned to two council districts. They're going to be working in those districts, and they're supposed to know all the things that are going on, and they are supposed to be the access into the rest of the city. Now, police kind of has their organization, will be coordinated with them, but if there's an issue related to streets, utilities, parks, whatever it might be, our hope is that those neighborhood outreach coordinators will take on that responsibility. Their office and their time, the majority of their time should be spent in the council districts on a daily basis. And we're going to try to find some tools so they can, if we need to, get a mobile on a regular basis so they spend most of their time out there. It's a model that I've seen work very effectively in other cities, and we're hoping to bring it here and build that to be successful. So anyway, I'll stop there. Just on another note, we are actually do have a fairly large discussion about noise ordinance review, Councilman Jones, as you requested. We're doing that on Monday, next week. So I anticipate we'll be bringing back to you some of your concerns. Because I think it's too easy to say, well, yeah, you have to be in 50 feet. But as you said, well, yeah, but who has to be there and who has to report it? So I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on noise ordinance, and we hear you loud and clear. And we'll try to see what we can do to take care of that. So, thank you.
Chris, can we introduce the two other coordinators that are they're here? They're right in the front row.
Yes, can we do that in a minute? Because we're not quite done yet with this part of things, but let's get to that in a minute. Scott, did you get your question answered?
That question about four others. So... I brought that up because it's been in the newspaper about the reorganization and utilizing the assistant city manager. Congratulations once again, and the deputy city managers, and really aligning the city as an organization as a whole to represent a structure more in tune with the size of this city.
Right, and what the structure allows to happen is. Kind of what you heard today was where we've kind of maybe the weakness of the structure has been is everybody kind of works in their specific areas. I mean, Councilman Jones talked about, well, code just does code and neighborhood does neighborhood and police does police. Well, that's okay, but that's not the way we can, the better place to work is that everybody shares in, we have a neighborhood issue. My favorite saying of one of my former city managers was, and it didn't matter who you were in the city, your slogan was, it is my job. I don't care if you're a police officer, a co-compliance officer, when a neighborhood has a problem, it is my job. I'll find a way to help you solve it as opposed to telling you what I can't do. So maybe the answer is, okay, from code, can you see it from the street? No. Okay, let me go find out and let me go help you. And I'll go back to this neighborhood action team, bring that up as an issue, and then we can come back, and maybe there is shared ideas. The way we have set the structure up is, the goal is that through the opportunity of different deputy city managers, having the opportunity to get involved in more than just finance. You know, Brian now gets to learn about parks and recreation and other facilities that he may not have had a chance to do before. You know, the idea.
Brian left. Yeah.
But it's the idea we become a more integrated organization where we are not only, this is only what I do is in this area, but it becomes a broader perspective of I serve the city in all of its issues, and we try to bring all the tools together to solve those problems.
And I think this is a good example of why that's a reorganization. There were questions all week about why are we doing it this way and changing things up. This type of program is exactly why we're making this reorganization. I think it will, barring the fact we don't have any money, as far as the organization communication is concerned, its success will be more successful because of this reorganization. So thank you, John. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to get to my notes now. and by the way, Chris, I like that slogan, it is my job, or how can I help? I think that one of the frustrations that almost every council member has felt is when we hear
back that the what people are encountering in working with the city is why you can't do something as opposed to how we can help you do something. Let's find another way. Let's go a different avenue. If I can't do it, let me connect you to somebody who can do it. And for that to be our organizational-wide focus is a really good focus. A couple of points. Noises, loud noises do equal shooting. Unfortunately, about 18 years ago, I'm thinking it's been about 18 years ago, in the area that's now my district, there were some people who were outside of their, and they were living in a fourplex, they were outside, they had the radio on very loud. Somebody said, turn it down. They didn't turn it down. The person came out with a gun, and I believe three people were killed. It isn't, these things do not occur in isolation. People get upset, they get angry. It's important to address all of those issues. The issue of the halfway houses, I want to come back to that for a minute, and I'm anticipating that all of that is going to come forward along with that ordinance from Phoenix that we need to address. I don't want anybody to think that this is the first time that we've talked about it. We've talked about it for quite some time, and I've tried previously to work on it at a federal level, and I had absolutely zero success with it. But as the chief said, I'm working on it again. It is a frustration that's an ongoing frustration. And a couple of years ago, on my webpage at the city, because every neighborhood meeting I was going to, I was getting hammered over this. You could if you wanted to. You could do something if you wanted. And so Scott helped me, and we put together something, and it's still up there on the webpage. So anybody who wants to understand what the federal regulations are that every city operates under, I would invite them to go to that webpage and look at that. But we're trying again. With a pretty narrow focus on it, and I appreciate the chief's help on that. I think it's a scary day when Tom and I actually are agreeing. It must scare him just like crazy. Does it
scare you?
Yes, just the same amount. Because the note that I put here was that this is a prioritization, a reprioritization. That was the very first note that I wrote down here. Our budget is, there's no new money. So we can sit here and we can talk about how I'd like to do it. But the other thing I wrote down, Chris, was unless we can cost recover. And what I would invite every department to do is examine when we are getting to that next level of service that somebody is being provided, how do we cost recover on that? And every department needs to look at that, and including neighborhood services. If we go to that next level beyond basic services, how do we cost recover that? So I would invite everybody to be thinking about that because that's the only way we get to maintain existing services and add some new things. There is no other way. As Tom said, we have defined the parameters of what we have. Now it's how do we prioritize within that. Now, I will say that last year I kept saying that there are many things that are public safety that we don't define as public safety. I think I pointed out that I think that when we help fund something like community bridges, that is a piece of public safety. Neighborhood services, for me, has always been a part of public safety. And that's why, for me, when we cut neighborhood services, we're impacting public safety. Some of the things that we are talking about in terms of what this level two, what did you call it, option two, the option two, some of that, in my mind, was what we were doing about 5 years ago out of neighborhood services, and then we just started cutting budgets, and we didn't have that happening because we had cut so many people. And so I think that for us to really have the public understand this and that education piece first that is so important, we have to keep talking about what the correlation is between what you saw in that alley, that picture that the chief put up there, and calls for service. There is a huge correlation. Officer Rayburn, I think, took me through that alley the other day. Could that alley be out in your district? It looked like it was. Anyway, Officer Rayburn, I'm looking at the head of that district. I think that we drove through that alley, and he was talking about the calls for service there. There is a huge correlation. And now we get to my point that I wrote down about. I thought it was so important I wrote it down about four different ways and four different times. We have current laws and codes in the city that I believe are not being enforced, that could be enforced, that could address some of these things. Mike talked about getting a housing code. We do have a housing code in Mesa. We have one that was passed by the voters several years ago. And do I think we need a tougher one? I think we need a slum landlord law. And Rex and I have been cheering that on for a while, with Kyle cheering it on with us. This is, but that would require the slum landlord
law would require a charter change. So the voters would have to approve that. But right now, when I look at those alleys, that isn't okay. That isn't okay under our existing laws. And so I think that the things that you're looking at could look at a tougher enforcement of current regulations. One of the things that we have done is we have really tried. We have had such an emphasis on we're not trying to offend anyone with our codes. What we're trying to do is get people in compliance. And so then what I hear back from residents is, yes, and I've called this in 6 times, and code compliance has cited them, and 6 months have gone by, and I understand why we did that. I don't think I think it's the right approach as we're educating people. But surely we are now past the education phase. If people aren't educated by now, I think that's their fault, not ours. After 6 years, Carrie?
I was going to add, Vice Mayor, I actually brought Ray here because to speak a little bit on that, because actually last couple months we looked at streamlining those processes and trying to get people into voluntary compliance much sooner, and then after so much time, basically issuing citations. So I wanted Ray, if he
Ray,
could come up.
Ray, you want to come up
just
and talk say about something
the
about that?
Just about the process that actually we're going to be implementing come January.
Because there's some, I don't know if you've noticed this, but you've all tapped into some real passion and frustration on
yes,
this council.
Yes,
I know that this is the first time a lot of people are seeing this, but behind the scenes, almost every council member, if not every council member up here, I'm going to guess everyone, has talked about their frustrations in this arena. So, Ray?
Good morning, Vice Mayor and members of the council. Just to kind of let you know what we've taken a look at our process here recently, and just trying to figure out a way to better streamline. And one of the things that we never want to remove our focus is the education process. And one of the things that we're doing with the new process that we're planning on implementing come January is instead of sending a notice of violation right off the bat, we're going to send out courtesy notices to people, educating them, letting them know about the rules and stuff. And because in actuality, every time we send out a notice, we get about a 90 to 95% of voluntary compliance rate. It's the 5%, the 8% that gives us a hard time. And what we decided to do, rather than right now we have 3 actual inspections before we actually cite a person. Well, we reduced that to 2. And what we did up front, we were a little more customer service friendly at the front, but at the end, once we educate the people, then we go to a citation process a lot quicker during that whole event. And we plan on putting this in place, become effective in January, once we straighten up some of our notices and so forth.
Thank you. Is there anything else on that you'd like us to know about?
No, other than will be a process of educating. We're going to go ahead and move forward with it. And I will tell you that from the community action team process. We've been working with that. We've been working with the community action teams, and that model does work. And it's been on a limited basis at this point, but it does work, and it's something I think that we are encouraged to pursue because of the different avenues that we have to solve different problems within our neighborhoods.
Well, and we really appreciate the perspective you bring to this. I don't know how many people know this, but you were in police service.
Yes.
And so you bring the whole picture together for us, and we really appreciate that. Thank you. I have a couple of other notes. One, Chief, I hear from residents that they call the police non-emergency number, and I think somebody else expressed it here a few minutes ago. They tend to feel, and I think it happens because that number is very, very busy, but they tend to feel that their complaints were dismissed, that they felt like they were bugging somebody by calling. And I think it's because these people are trying to move off a call really fast, and I can understand that. But when I say to them, it's still ongoing, you need to call back again. Oh, I don't want to call back again. They're mad at me because I called the first time. And so if we can work on that perception, sure. I think that would really help.
Sure.
The national standards on neighborhood, on block watch, are sometimes inhibiting to neighborhoods. And so that's why we had this neighborhood, registered neighborhood thing. We might still need to work on that because people go home and they want to go home. They're tired. They don't want one more meeting. It's very challenging. I don't want to discourage the registered neighborhoods, which have allowed a person who's active out there talking to all of their neighbors without getting them together for that twice a year potluck, from still having a really active, involved neighborhood, but they don't get the block watch sign.
So, you know, maybe a neighborhood watch sign instead of a block watch sign, something that addresses the changes that have occurred in terms of people feeling overwhelmed in their lives from when block watch started. I think there have been some changes, frankly.
And frankly, I come from a city where we don't follow those rules. We put the signs. If the neighborhood says we want a sign, we just put the sign. They pay for the sign.
Really?
Yeah. So I when you guys are
okay,
talking about...
let's do that.
When you guys are talking about this register program, I mean, this is all foreign language. You're speaking another language. I'm not used to that.
We had people signs who were taken away from them.
Yeah,
they would come to me and they'd say, oh, yes.
Yeah.
They would say, you know, I didn't have enough people at the last meeting. I had it, and you know, we were short a few people.
Yeah, you're speaking a foreign language.
Okay, well, since English is now the official language.
Well, I may struggle with that, though.
Since English is now the official language, I think we're officially telling you.
Get right over it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, the one thing, though, there is a cost to the sign. And, again, I'm accustomed to the neighborhoods have to pay for the sign.
And I think we should look at that.
Okay.
Look at that aspect of things.
Yeah. No, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's what, and I forgot what the fee. It was very minimal. It was like, you know, $50 or $100, and the neighborhood pays for the sign, you put it up.
And we could have a grant. We can have a grant program for neighborhoods that are low-income neighborhoods or something like that. But, you know, if they want to apply for one of our Pride grants or something, that would get it up. But, okay, that's
neon.
Good to know.
Okay,
neon.
Is this a direction for us to follow up on the sign issue?
Yes.
Okay,
it is.
I want to understand.
Is anybody here disagreeing with that? Okay, I don't see any disagreement with that. We thought we had been told that we had no choice.
I've never heard. You're the first time. I mean, I'm coming.
Okay,
from the
let
floor.
Me let me just make sure I've gotten through my whole list here, because I have okay, neighborhood. I think I got it all. All right, Kyle.
Tom just whispered in my ear. Great program. We could take the sign down and have them buy it again every year.
You can go to the partnership with the local gang members. You know, they can take the sign down there. Gary will get at least two code enforcement officers out of that.
Absolutely. So much for confidentiality.
Oh, you forgot to pay him the buck. Scott.
This is an interesting one for talking about communication. I've been dealing with a sign issue in my neighborhood, trying to get a sign for a neighborhood. They were willing to put it up, pay for it, whatever it took, and we just solved it here today. And I've been working on it for a month.
Okay.
And that's how bad sometimes it is, even from the council's perspective, to try to, all right, which avenue do I need to go? And I just should have gone to Chris on that. And something that the vice mayor had mentioned I wanted to bounce off on is working with looking toward cost recovery for some of our programs. And I thought this particular program may not be cost – we may not be able to cost recover from it, but it doesn't mean that there are other programs within the department
like
that we could cost recover from and roll into here. I just wanted to make sure we weren't thinking strictly, can I fund this by cost recovering this particular one when – that may not work, but we can do that somewhere else. So, thank you.
Great clarification, Scott, and I completely agree with that. Tom?
Just briefly, I appear to be the comic relief today. I actually suppressed several jokes about mobile command vehicles and payday loan stores earlier.
We can take the signs and put them up.
Well, I thought, you know, we could use them for noise abatement, but... because we could use, I'm sure it's got a loudspeaker that we could overwhelm any other neighborhood noise. But seriously, though, he's already left, but I wanted to make sure that everybody here in this room and everybody watching knows how much respect I have for Brian Raines and the work he does for the city. That was a joke, and it was done because I had suppressed these other probably not funny comments, and that one just came to me, and I was talking, and when I talk, I don't think. So... I do apologize to Brian if he took it at all seriously. I don't think he did, but if he did or if anyone else did, he does yeoman's work. His real handicap now, however, is that he's now on the same level with Jack, and we know how to work Jack does.
I,
Knowing Brian, I think he probably got a large charge out of that. I had this image when you were talking, Chris, about these new meetings. I thought, because I assume that you guys postulate what kind of questions you're going to get from the council, and I want to know who takes the role of Tom and who takes the role of Claudia. When we were out in the community during all of the discussions about the budget stuff, people would say, we want to see Tom and Claudia fight. Come on. we might be able to raise some money that way, too, Tom. What I'd like to do is go back to our hero presentation, discuss and provide direction on the initiatives. The direction I heard was that we're going to move ahead with option two, which was talking about the no-cost part, and then work on option three and look at that in the context of all of the budget and prioritization of the budget. Is there any disagreement with that? Okay, so that's the direction we're giving. On the community prosecution, I still had a couple of questions myself because I saw a few things that were outlined there that I thought, why are we having a lawyer do this? I thought it seemed like a task that you wouldn't want to assign a cost of lawyers to. So I think we would want to address this some more. But the concept of putting somebody in your office on these teams, I think, is a good concept. Does anybody have any other feedback on that community prosecution piece? Councilmember Griswold, you're okay with that?
Okay.
Councilmember Griswold, other feedback on this?
I would just like the chief to explain to the residents what a cat team is. I had someone ask me one time why we don't have dog teams if we have cat teams. And, you know, community action team, we use these, you know, acronyms that no one understands. So if you could explain what community action team does.
Sure. Basically what it is, we have approximately 24, 25 officers citywide. There are about 8 in each of the stations, officers and a supervisor. And one of their roles is to deal with quality of life issues in the neighborhoods. If we have a noise problem, and for instance, we were addressing some of the noise problems for one of you where we went out and talked to the people that were involved. If there is a complaint that you have a location where, you know, it appears that there's some kind of criminal activity, but it's not very clear yet, you know, those are the kind of things that the community action team will go and work on. And then if they need additional police resources or they need resources from anywhere else in the city, they go out and put them together and try to deal with from a problem-solving kind of approach. It's really kind of I hate to use a community policing term, but it's sort of a community policing team that, you know, brings together different resources, whether they're internal police resources or external from other parts of the city or even other community resources that are outside the city family and trying to deal with a particular problem.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Chief, did you bring any people today that you wanted to introduce to everybody? I noticed that there were a few people from PD here.
Well, we do. We have, in fact, a lot of the presentation that you saw from the police department side really stems from a pilot program that is going on in the Red Mountain District with Lieutenant Stahl and his personnel here. And what we did is our original presentation really talked about Red Mountain, but we recognize that we're not talking about Red Mountain. We're talking about the city of Mesa, so we want to make it very generic and say, look, this is something that we know that will work because we have already tried it. We are trying it, and it works.
And I did the ride along in Red Mountain the other day. That's why, Fred, I was looking at you. I was thinking it was an alley from that district. Was it an alley from that district?
That is correct. Everything
okay.
Here.
I thought I recognized it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
And let's. I'll get you in one second. Let's have the introduction now of the introduction of the coordinators. Cynthia is going to give me her cell phone number offline.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Thanks for the opportunity, and I apologize. These introductions probably should have been done earlier.
No, this is great.
You should, I believe, in your packet attached to the Neighborhood Services report, have a map. I believe it's attached to one of the attachments, number one or two. That does have the contact information, and I would encourage you to please call if there is an issue. I also wanted to bring up real quickly that for the past several months, the outreach staff have been meeting with the council assistants, with Rod and Kim, and biweekly, every other week, to talk about these issues and better communicate issues, and that communication goes both ways. So I just wanted you to be aware that those meetings are occurring, and it's kind of a good avenue, a good mechanism to get that information back and forth. So with that, I'd like to introduce, we'll start with Susan Froboda. Susan has been with the outreach office for about a year now. She comes from Solid Waste, and she is working in districts 2 and 6. Susan. And next is Cynthia Garza. Cynthia actually comes from the Code Compliance Division. She did a kind of a departments, which within the department came over from code, and she works in districts 1 and 3. And myself, I'm working in districts 4 and 5.
Thank you. And I think it would probably be a good idea at some point for each of you to sit down with the council members as well, not just the assistants.
That's our next steps, yep.
Excellent. Okay, are there any other pieces of information that any of you want us to have or that we should have acted on today or given you direction on today that we did not? Thank you. That was a wonderful presentation. It means a lot to all of us. We know how important this work is in keeping community safe. So thank you very much.
Thanks
for all of your work. Okay, let's move on now to item number 2, which is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. We have 2, Parks and Recreation Board. I have a motion, Utility Committee. I have about 50 seconds. that was not equal to a minute, however. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, here are reports on meetings and or conferences attended. What have we got? Councilmember Whalen.
Real briefly, Vice Mayor, on Tuesday, attended a meeting with Chief Gascona and his staff and the members of the Board of the Public Safety Association. It was mainly an introductory session so the members could meet the chief and also talk about future endeavors between the Public Safety Foundation and the City Police Department in ways to which the board could help the department. Talked about some issues on trying to raise additional funds that would support the police department's and fire department's mission. It was a good meeting. I think there will be follow-ups between the chief and members of the board. President of the association, Mr. Pomeroy, is a great supporter of public safety, and I think we'll have future meetings that will perhaps help along some of these lines on funding in the area of perhaps some foundation efforts I know that the chief and Mr. Brady are talking about. So it was a good meeting, and I think the members of the board were impressed with Chief Gascon and what he brings to the department.
It would be great to get a corpus there of in excess of $1 million so that he could start having some real money coming off of that. Councilmember Griswold.
The meeting last night about the Stonebridge property and 720 acres and where to locate a school there with neighbors. And that's going to be a very high-end, good community being built near McKellips and Ellsworth. Also, this morning at 6 a.m., I was in our cemetery with Channel 15 News promoting both the British Memorial Service this Sunday at 10:45 and our Veterans Parade also at 10:45 on Saturday. So it was an early morning.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. any others? I was at the Child Crisis Center 25th anniversary event on Tuesday night. The Mana Club of Mesa started the Child Crisis Center 25 years ago, and I think it was Betty Kerr, who said that at that time people said we don't have any child abuse in the East Valley. Fortunately, these women knew better. They reached out and did something important that has been serving for 25 years. Children of the East Valley and families of the East Valley. So that was great recognition. And Chris Scarpati, who is their executive director, has been with them the entire 25 years. Quite a record. All right, Chris, we're moving to a meeting of schedule of meetings and general information. Yes, I can talk.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Next Thursday, we'll have a study session at 7:30 a.m. We'll be covering 2 topics. One will be the Falcon Field Master Plan that we'll be initiating here quickly, as well as you'll be receiving a briefing from the Mr. Wonderful Brian Raines on the financial budget forecast. And then the following, and we did that so that you would have that perspective on Thursday prior to the Friday council retreat, which will be in the Saguaro Room of the main library at 8:30 on Friday the 17th. And then, of course, we have our Monday, November 20th council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Whalen?
Chris, what's our anticipated end time on Friday?
I think we're anticipating probably around 3:30.
Okay. And there's funeral services for former House Speaker Jeff Grosskopf this morning. All right. Pre-scheduled public appearances. I don't have any of those. Do I have items from citizen present? Are there any speakers? All right. Motion to adjourn? Second? All in favor on a standing vote.
Aye.
Thank you.